K.H. That's me. I am a singer-guitarist with a specialization in Americana and all things that are old.
M.K. That's me. Is a folk singer, pianist, and licensed Simply Music piano teacher.
We won't be discussing the new pop music of today because it sounds too new for us and we're not interested. However, we will surprise and delight you with records that others just don't find.
This is MK and I'm sitting in my room in Auckland, New Zealand for another episode of KHMK Talk.
And this is Kirby Harris and KH, and I'm sitting in my room in Australia, in Devonport, in Tasmania, on the small island of Australia. And
it's a big island.
Well, it's the small island compared to the mainland of Australia.
Oh, yes, yes, of course, of course.
yes. yeah, and this is KH and MK, KHMK Music Talk, and an apology for those of you that were waiting for an episode to drop about 2 weeks ago.
More than 2 weeks ago, but we're back now, and we have
Yes, we're very happy. Yeah, we are. We're very happy to be back. Life got in the way, as it often does, with, just everything. This episode we are covering the second volume of the John Prine tribute albums called Broken Hearts and Dirty Windows, and Songs of John Prine. Sorry, I will say that again. It's called Broken Hearts and Dirty Windows, the Songs of John Prine, and in episode 2 we covered Broken Hearts and Dirty Windows, Songs of John Prine, Volume 1, which it is not called that, it's just called Broken Hearts and Dirty Windows, the Songs of John Prine. This one, the second one, is actually called Broken Hearts and Dirty Windows, the Songs of John Prine, Volume 2. A bit of a mouthful, I know, but that's what the title is. We are covering that. It is a tribute record. It was released, I think, about a month or two after John Prine's death. And I think because of that, it holds a bit more
a bit more
weight than the first one, because the performances on it, I think, are a bit more kind of emotionally connected, I think. But anyway, this record has a different mix of people on it than the last one. It has artists like as broad ranging as Brandi Carlile and Sturgill Simpson. It has Nathaniel Rateliff. It has, of course, Bonnie Raitt, who first recorded.
You used to see in Melbourne.
I did. Yes.
Awesome, right?
Yes. I got to see, but yes. A slight digression. I saw Bonnie Raitt recently in Melbourne along with Mavis Staples, and the concert was so transformative for me, dear listeners, that my year has turned into pre Bonnie Raitt and Mavis Staples and after Bonnie Raitt and Mavis Staples. In fact, I have no memory of anything that precedeth, which is actually true. Yeah. Yes, so, I literally, I have no knowledge whatsoever. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. So, Bonnie Raitt first recorded Angel from Montgomery in 1972. And for this tribute album, she actually re-recorded it, which so it's a totally different version to the one that she did previously. She sang it live in Melbourne, which she always does. For those people that go to Bonnie Raitt concerts, she always sings Angel from Montgomery. And I was privileged enough to hear her sing it live. And, yeah. Anyway.
Then you go listen to the 30 seconds we're going to play and go find a record.
Yes.
It's an interesting song, that.
Yes, because John Prine actually wrote it from the point of view of a woman, which a guy had not done before until he did it. And a lot of his friends and people that he was with, he was hanging around with, sort of said, you can't do this. You really can't do it. Because he went to somebody and said, oh, I've got this line. I am an old woman named after my mother. What am I supposed to do with that? So the story goes. And so anyway, yes, you know. And of course, you know, because of that, you know, people were kind of, you know, a bit like, hey, you can't write this, you know. John Prine was like, well, I'm going to do it. So.
It came off quite nicely.
It did. Actually, it came off very nicely. It is an incredibly empathetic and compassionate song. A bit humorous, as is most, well, probably half of John Prine's work. He tends to sit sort of half in the jokey and half in the compassionate empath. But even his jokes, his jokier numbers have, you know, have a nod to being compassionate. Even though he's being, you know, cynical in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this second volume of the John Prine tribute record opens with Brandi Carlile, and she is singing John Prine's
last ever song.
Yes, his last ever song that was written. He recorded it before he died, I believe. Yes, he did, because I actually heard it. And so, yeah, the record opens with Brandi Carlile singing I Remember Everything. And it is a beautiful way to open a tribute record to an absolute legend. Brandi Carlile actually did know John Prine. John Prine was the first person that she actually sung her song The Mother to. You can hear her tell that story on her live at MSG Madison Square Garden concert, which is available on YouTube for anyone that wants to go and watch that. She knew him. He sang with her. They did a few things together. So she opens this album with that song, I Remember Everything. It is a beautifully recorded version. It is recorded with all of the empathy and you know, compassion and, you know, love that a musician can have for a song and for the songwriter who wrote it.
That's the interesting thing about this record is they're all so much older. And in some respects, and they would have sung the stuff in their youths. And in some respects, the performances carry, like you said, carry a lot more weight because of that. Understanding of the material, because they know what it's like to grow old.
Well, I mean, I think that comment is more perhaps worthy for Hello in There and Angel from Montgomery. because a lot of the people on this record are actually quite young. They're actually probably, you know, our age, but they've known John Prine, and John Prine has supported them. But you are correct, because, you know, Bonnie Raitt knew John Prine. They, you know, they were friends, you know, from way back when she was, you know, in her, you know, youth of being 20 odd, 20 something. And so I think, you know, for her to go and record Angel from Montgomery a second time, like, you can hear in it even how her interpretation has morphed over, you know, the 50, 40 odd years that she's been singing it. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. And I think for that reason, the performances, yeah, they do hold more weight than the first record, because, you know, because it was recorded, you know, in, well, it was, I don't know when exactly it was recorded, but it was released about a week or so before he died, or, you know, sometime before
after he died,
sorry, people. And, you know, people were talking about this tribute in the Americana community quite a while before he died. And then he died before it was going to be released. And so, you know, yeah, it carries more weight. And I also think on the second volume, the performances are actually better. I mean, the repertoire is equally as good, but the performances on the first record are a bit, not necessarily ho-hum, but they lack something. Or is that just because, you know, we, the two of us, listened to the second one first?
I think that's the case. Well, I say it's to Kirby. Before we started doing this, we need to play all the famous stuff in the second podcast we do on this. So that's why we picked what we picked. Because there are versions of the, most of them are repeat. And I think, well, not most of them, but, like, there's a couple of duplicates.
Well, and there's only one duplicate, isn't there?
Two, I think. But I can't remember offhand how many.
Because I don't think Bonnie Raitt was on the first one, was she, from memory?
Nah, but someone else thinks Angel from Montgomery.
Someone else sings Angel from Montgomery. Yeah, and Halloween there wasn't on the second record, on the first record, so.
No, it wasn't.
No. But anyway,
But that's the trouble with these tribute records. You're going to make a record to honor someone who is so great. But, like, it's going to have to be duplicates.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you could delve.
People are going to like it or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could delve deeper into. I mean, because, well, I mean, let's face it, a John Prine fan is either going to like them or they're not. Now, I sent my musical DJ Kit the second tribute, and he listened to it, and then he sent me a message saying that he was quite disappointed, face with a tear emoji. And, I mean, I can understand that from somebody who's been a fan of John Prine for about 40 years. I haven't. You know, so he's obviously known, you know, the originals of some of this stuff. You know, I haven't. But a lot of the artists on this record, I think, particularly in the second one, they seem to have more of a connection with the material.
Yeah.
A lot of the artists on the first record appear to be kind of, the feeling that I get from it is very much let's record this song and then run off and do other things. No, I could be wrong about that, you know, because I mean we weren't there, we just listened to the records and kind of
but getting a bunch of people from the community of musicians to sing John Ryan has to be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, look, it does.
And I'm glad they did it.
Oh, so am I.
But speaking of difficulty, we've got to talk about Sam Stone. I find the next couple of recordings difficult to talk about because they're very, very vulnerable. Who's singing that, Sam Stone?
John Paul White.
Right, that's right. Ugh. I thought I remembered his name right. But, like I said before, they've all gotten older.
Yes.
And, I've heard other recordings of Sam Stone by younger men. And they're not as deep. They don't understand it. Well, they understand it, but there's not the level of connection with the song.
Well, I think the person who understands it most is John Prine, actually.
Well, of course.
But
he wrote the damn thing.
Yes, but John Paul White is pretty, pretty close.
Yes, yes. It's very close. It's pretty good. Well, who could write a song about an addict and pull it off? That's very hard.
And considering how young he was, I mean, he was only in his 20s when he wrote Sam Stone.
Yeah.
And to be able to pull it off, I mean, you know, let alone write the fucking thing, but to be able to sing it with such
conviction.
Yeah, conviction and, you know, I mean, a 20-year-old soul doesn't wander around anywhere necessarily thinking about those things. I mean, the same could be said for his recording, his recording of Hello in there, which, you know, a person in their 20s doesn't
think about at least old people.
The people that I used to know in my 20s certainly didn't wander around thinking about old people.
I did. I spent a lot of time performing for old people. But
yeah, well, so have I. But anyway, like most people in their 20s that I grew up with certainly weren't thinking about, old people and hollow ancient eyes and things like that. But anyway, John Prine certainly was. And
we love him for it.
Yes, we do. But, Emilio Harris.
Is Emilio Harris' crack?
Yes, it is.
And age is catching up with her, finally.
Yes, age is certainly catching up with Emilio. It is catching up with her voice. Which, in some aspects, is incredibly difficult for me as an Emilio Harris devotee to talk about, because it's very sad when a voice like hers becomes vulnerable. However, having said just that, it is also very, very nurturing at the same time to hear her sing this song like that, because you certainly you hear the vulnerability. You can hear the fact that she understands it, and I think had she covered it, you know, like even 20 years ago, it wouldn't be the same because she's not, well, she was, but she wasn't as old then.
Yeah.
And I think what happened, because I know that Joan Baez covered this song too in the 70s, I think it might have been.
Yeah, 1975. It was 75 record. It was, but everybody has covered this song, which is why it's very, very hard to talk about because it's a very, very well known song.
And yes, yeah. But what I was going to say was that Joan Baez does it almost at a gallop, and I, for one, not to denigrate Joan Baez's name here, because I mean I love her. I mean I've seen her live and she's fantastic. But not to denigrate her youth or anything of her for that matter. Whilst I hear a story in her version, I don't hear the. She lacks the insight, I think.
Yeah.
To sing it, and that's, you know, I mean, and that's not, it's not her fault. It's just, you know, it's just that, you know, she was obvious, she was singing it, and she does a good version. If you want to listen to a well sung version that isn't John Prine, listen to that. If you are fussy and picky like I'm being, if you think that the tempo of it is too quick, like I do, which is probably a very wise thought because it is very quick. But hearing it sung by Emmylou Harris, who is of an age now where that could very well happen to her, although I hope it doesn't, but it might. It is very, very vulnerable, and it, you know, you can hear the careworn-ness of her voice. You can hear the empathy and the vulnerability, and
it's good. It's,
yes,
nice.
It is. Yeah.
There's also a version of Joan Baez during the lockdown streamed on YouTube.
Oh, yes.
And it's interesting to listen to that too. And Bette Midler covered it, and it was extremely theatrical. But that's what Bette Midler is.
Yeah, I actually did hear her version of it the other day, on Deep Dive, and I actually liked it. Although I did find it interesting because she changed a lot of the the lyrics.
Yeah, I don't remember the specifics, but
Me and My Husband. So she changed.
Oh, that's right. My husband. Yeah.
Yeah. And Someday I'll Go and Call Up Judy. So she's seeing it from the woman's point of view, which is interesting. But I also, whilst I like it, because I mean her voice is, you know, she's Bette Midler, yeah. So you know. I also found it slightly jarring, but it's probably only jarring to me because I know the song in its original form.
Yeah, that probably is the case.
And, you know, I'm used to hearing Me and Loretta, We Don't Talk Much More, instead of Me and My Husband, We Don't... It's odd. Anyway, I think Hello In There actually ends that John Prine record, so...
Yeah, what are we going to do next fortnight? We're going to do songs.
Random songs.
I want to do Lowen and Navarro. riding
and
on
I
the
think,
wall.
Do we really need... Okay, I'm not sure what I'm going to do for my two songs.
I only know I'm going to do that, but I don't know what else I'm going to do.
I'll probably end up doing Front Porch by Joe Williams as one of mine, but...
Oh, we'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. So anyway, next episode, people, is going to be a lucky dip. I am KH of KH.
And this is
KH,
and we're going to sign off. I need you to stop the tape.
Yes.